Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, March 30th, 2026. I am Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney, Zach Horwitz, and Cassidy Palmer. There is no good way to sugarcoat this past week. Indiana went 0-4 with a home loss to Indiana State and a road sweep at the hands of now number 19, Nebraska. Indiana State used 9 pitchers Tuesday, only one of those threw more than an inning. Indiana got a 3-inning, no-out, no-run, one-hit start out of Connor Lynn. Regan Rivera had a clean inning in relief, striking out 2 batters. In all, Indiana pitching gave up just 3 earned runs on the day, but a throwing error and the offense not capitalizing on opportunities led to a 5-4 loss in the non-conference midweek matchup. For 2 weeks in a row, the Hoosiers have shown a new capability on offense. After 4 to 5 innings of struggle against a very talented weekend arm, they figure a way to break through. In the top of the 6th inning Friday at Nebraska, Caleb Koski and Cooper Malamazian led the inning off with singles. A wild pitch scores Koski, and pinch hitter Owen Tanuver gets a huge RBI single. Hogan Denny then gets a big hit to plate 2 more runs and cut what was a 5-run Husker lead to 1 run. The Hoosiers kept on battling, but couldn't cut into the lead and dropped yet another 1-run contest 6-5. They have now lost 6 such contests, 4 of those to teams currently ranked in D1 baseball's top 25. The Hoosiers got life in the top of the 6th inning Saturday, as has been a common refrain of late. Talented right-hander Carson Yasa was dominating the Hoosier hitters, racking up 10 strikeouts. Braden Ricketts was already on base from a one-out walk when Cole Decker singled to right field to get 2 runners on, and head coach Jeff Mercer pinch-hit freshman Owen Tanuver in place of Mateo Noto. Tanuver crushed a 3-run bomb to left center, and suddenly the Hoosiers were only down by 2 runs. After Will Moore was unable to stop a hard-hit ball from getting to left field and Landon Fry threw to an empty second base on a ground ball, Jackson Yarberry allowed a 3-run homer, and the Hoosiers dropped the game 12-7. The Hoosiers jumped out to an early 2-0 lead on Sunday against former Indiana pitcher Cooper Katsky, but left the bases loaded. Indiana let Katsky breathe, and he turned back into the guy he's been most of this season. The only other damage Indiana would put on him was a Fry solo home run that tied the game in the 6th after Nebraska had taken a lead. Nebraska ran away with the game in a maddening 8-run 7th inning to seal the sweep 12-4. The Hoosiers dropped to 10-17 on the season and 3-9 in Big Ten play, 15th place. The whole week was a disaster for Indiana defensively after a great start in the first 3 weeks of league play. Every starting infielder, 5 when you look at the different lineups, had an error on the weekend. Well, like we do in most weeks, we're going to start this off with Cass. What statistical points of interest do you have?
Well, before I get to numbers, I'm going to start by saying I'm not saying anything good about the defense again. I said good things about the defense, and then the defense did not good things. I also take back a bit of what I said in my stats analysis last week about patience and being overly aggressive after that Saturday game with, I don't even remember how many strikeouts looking and just not swinging at the ball. The only stretch that gets a...
There were 6 of those on Saturday.
Yes. The only stretch that gets a pass on that being patient, passive, whatever you want to call it, is the stretch in the 8th inning where Nebraska literally threw 14 straight balls across 2 different pitchers. If they're throwing you 14 straight balls, don't swing at anything. Make them throw a strike. Other than that, it was just all passive on Saturday. Not even what I could remotely call patient. But onto the numbers, the thing that stood out to me and probably stood out to a lot of people at home was the Pitching with two outs was one of the big things that stood out to me. And Austin Render said multiple times in his broadcast that this Nebraska team is particularly strong with two outs. They score a larger proportion of their runs than most teams with two outs. But it was it if I weren't an IU fan, I'd almost call it comical. Because so on the season, IU is giving up about 41% of its runs of the opponent runs come with two outs. This weekend at Nebraska, that was 73% of the runs came with two outs. On the season, opponents are hitting 284 with two outs. Nebraska hit 442. That is insane. I don't know the last time I've seen something like that over the course of an entire weekend. And that includes them hitting just 200 with two outs on Friday. They hit a ridiculous 550 with two outs on Sunday. But I also wanted to look at, like, just not even just with two outs, but those situations where can they just end the inning, regardless of what happened leading up to the second out occurring, just looking from that point on. Because ideally, perfect situation. You have exactly one two out plate appearance per inning. Sometimes you can have fewer. You get things like double plays or catching a runner or picking off a runner where, yeah, technically that plate appearance doesn't count, even though it was with two outs. But just looking at those innings where it got to two outs, and then what percentage of those innings were that perfect one plate appearance and done? On the season, IU sits actually about 60% of the relevant innings go exactly one two out plate appearance. That's not great, but not horrible. We're seeing guys have to throw more pitches than they probably should, which either gets them into trouble or gets them out of the game sooner than would be ideal. And it's actually not too, it's different between wins and losses, but it's not as extreme as some of the other numbers where it's 70% are that perfect one plate appearance with two outs in wins, and it's about 50-50 in losses. However, against Nebraska, only about 30% of the relevant innings went just one two out plate appearance. They were drawing free passes. They were getting hits. They were, unfortunately, reaching on errors. Three of the errors over the weekend came with two outs. So I would. What I'd like to see moving forward would be to tighten that up. It's not always going to be perfect. It's rarely ever going to be perfect. In fact, on the season, there's yet to be a single game where every relevant inning was that perfect one plate appearance. The closest was, let's see. Looks like the first Washington game. Eight of the innings were just one two-out plate appearance, and there was one with multiple two-out plate appearances. So I'd love to see the pitching staff tighten that up and see what that can do moving on, both for end results for the game, as well as longevity for those pitchers. So that was the rabbit hole I went down this week. Chris, even in rough weeks, there's some silver lining and there's some red belts to assign. What do you got?
Yeah, a football coach, the Jets and the Giants once had Bill Parcells says you are what your record says you are. You know, and we all, what are we, 10 and 17, Carl, right? You had mentioned 3-9 in the Big Ten, and those are facts, and they're undeniable, like a few good men or whatever. But, you know, we do look at the bright spots of the series of the week, give out the awards, because there were some positives. 0-4, though, it was definitely frustrating. And then you know it's five in a row now because of the Sunday, from the week before. But I did come up with some belts, and regardless of what the record is for the team, some players did shine and they deserve their credit. So what I'm going to do are pitching red belt. I don't know if I ever gave a pitching red belt to a guy who hit the first guy that he faced and drove in a run, but honestly, I think he deserves it. For what he did after that, and that's Jake Vogel. Yes, he hit the first guy, and the run scored. He came in with bases loaded and one out, though. Most of the time, a run's going to score anyway, to be honest. But then he got the double play. Wasn't your normal 6-4-3 double play, and we'll get into that. But he did get a double play there. And then the next two innings, seventh inning, just a single, eighth inning, just a walk. And he only threw 29 pitches. I thought Mercer might bring him back out because we had the big bats coming up in the ninth, right? I'm like, let's tie this. Let's bring Jake back out because he hasn't thrown that much, you know? But, you know, we didn't get the run in the ninth, so he doesn't face the guys in the ninth. But Jake Vogel gets the Joey Donato Award. He ends up with 2 2/3 innings with just a hit and a walk. Like I said, just the 29 pitches to get through that much was pretty impressive. He dealt with some inherited runners. Yes, one scored. But that was the only run he gave up. Now, for the defensive red belt, for the Tony Butler, we go to Jake Vogel's first inning, the sixth inning on Friday night when they brought him in. Yes, he hit the guy, I understand. But after that, Caleb Konski hoses the guy at the plate. And then, there was a replay and you wonder what's happening, da da da. But we get the call, okay? And that keeps it a 6-4 game. So Caleb shows off the arm out and left, and he gets the defensive Tony Butler Award. For the offensive player award, two parts of two games for this young man. He's a Poly Prep County Day three-state title winner. Okay, so he knows big games. And Coach Mercer has used him off the bench to pinch hit. That's Owen Tanuva. He's going to get the Alex Dickerson Award. So not only for his Friday night pinch hit in the sixth inning, which got it from 5-1 to 5-2. And then Denny comes, right? Makes it 5-4. So the comeback rolling. Then he pinch hit. Carl mentioned it and he touched on it perfectly. And, you don't know who you're going to go to. They go to Tanuva. Boom. Three-run home run. Put some spark back in the game. And he did his thing. We took out one Brooklyn guy for another. Carl nailed it. Noto came out. Tanuva came in. And, he earned it. Yeah, full count. He had a great AB. To begin with, he drew the full count coming off the bench. That's not easy to do, but he cracks the home run and he earns our Alex Dickerson Award. So it's Tanuva, Vogel, and Koski for this week. And as we've been doing, Carl's going to follow me with some Big Ten updates and some pick'em updates.
I did do wanted to add one thing to that, Chris, though, was that Tanuver also had his first career hit this week on Tuesday against Indiana State, and that was in a big spot too.
Even more of a reason to wear the red belt. I like it. Over just the clean sweep, big time. And Mercer's tried this before, bringing in the freshman Unfortunately, he does it a lot with the 27th out, I've noticed. I'm like, don't do that to the kid. You know, at least this is like sixth inning bases. You know, you just got to get something going. I don't like that 27th out freshman coming in. It's just not fair to the guy.
Chris, you're repeating defensive awards. Week three and
Yes.
four went to Decker. Weeks five and
Yep.
six went to Koski now.
I have
Yep.
no
And I.
pattern, Zach. I have no pattern. One year, I think it was last year, I gave out like every position. It just worked out that
Yes,
way,
you did. And
right? Well,
I would like to point out that this year, it is given the position that week one got it for, because he plays, well, corner outfield and catcher. All of your picks thus far this year have been outfield, with the exception of Rivera.
Really?
Yep, Denny, Rivera, Krause, Decker, Koski, Koski. I do want to point out
Honestly,
what that means
that I could have
for that
guessed.
outfield. Yeah,
Unfortunately, that I could have guessed, Cass.
this
If you
out,
pull up
but
the season stats, you see that easily.
would we have predicted that in middle of February? No.
Oh, no. I'm saying from
No.
watching the games.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. That's a great point.
Well,
Absolutely.
another piece on Koski, though, is his throwing arm is hurt. He
Yeah.
did that with a hurt throwing arm.
Right. That's right.
So
Because
that's.
we can't pitch because the arm's hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nah, I mean it was wild. And like I mentioned, we were talking off air, you know, the Friday night, I was absolutely locked in St. John's Duke and everything. But a lot of that happened after, which was I was grateful for, because then I could jump back in. March Madness still lives, guys. You still got to pay attention to both. Come on.
The Big Ten had an interesting week. So you had Illinois traveling to Penn State and taking a series. You had Michigan traveling to Rutgers and taking a series. Washington held on at home to beat Northwestern. I think the big surprise of the weekend, which Chris picked, was Ohio State going to not only take the series against Minnesota. Ohio State went in and swept them, which was very impressive. Purdue, a road series win at Michigan State. UCLA, road series win at Iowa. And USC, road series win at Maryland. So that was a lot of road wins. And the way our pick'em went, Cass and I struggled. We were only 4-3 on the week. My big pull was on Northwestern, and that didn't work. But I did. My curse is gone. Purdue is just absolutely driving my results. Cass and I do stay in first place, but we are only a series ahead of both Zach and Chris, who had 6-1 weeks. Andrew Bennett also had a 6-1 week. He had a really good week as well. But yeah, because Zach also joined me in picking Purdue. So, but Zach was pretty solid across the board. He only missed the Minnesota series, which that kind of happens. Drew picked picked Ohio State, and it as well as Chris, and that came in for him. Now the thing is, in the coming week, we've kind of had like we're all doing really well, you know, by percentage. You know, it's like this time last year, I was literally underwater. I was under 500. It was that bad. None of us are that way. But part of that is because we've kind of had these freebies each week. We've all been picking the Los Angeles teams. That's not going to work in week five. Because USC is going to stay in Los Angeles and go across town to play UCLA. So those two teams, the two juggernauts of the Big Ten, will be playing each other. And that obviously is going to be the series. That's the series of the week in the country for Division I baseball, is going to be that Big Ten series. But you've also got Illinois going to Purdue. Maryland at Ohio State, I think, is going to be fascinating. Michigan just, they don't get any breather. They're going to have to go to Oregon. Don't envy that. Michigan State at Northwestern, that should be quite interesting. I have no idea how that's going to wrap up. Minnesota at Iowa, both teams struggled last week. Penn State at Nebraska. And then, of course, Rutgers is coming to the BART. I guess since he had such a good week, I'm going to start with Zach this time. Zach, why don't you give us your picks?
All right, slowly climbing back. I'm looking for the back-to-back title. I bring it up once I have good weeks, so I'm looking to continue that. And I'm actually going to go with all the home teams this week. When I look at these matchups, I think that Michigan State Northwestern can go either way. I mean, Maryland Ohio State, that's kind of an ugly series, but that's where I take the home team. Or Ohio State's, they won a series last week. But obviously, the most intriguing one, USC, UCLA. I think both of those teams, especially USC, can really pitch it well. But they're going to be low scoring games. I think UCLA has the better offense. So I'll take the Bruins. I mean, they're the number one team for a reason. And I think it's hard to pick against them. So I'm going all home teams this week.
Chris, you were also 6-1.
I didn't go with the Homer. I had a different theory. Zach went to Homer Simpson, and that's his choice. I kind of combined mine with March Madness. So I took Michigan because they're in the Final Four. I took Ohio State because I don't like Maryland. So that has nothing to do with basketball. Illinois because they're in the Final Four. Nebraska because they had made the Elite Eight. Iowa because they had made the Elite Eight. And UCLA because of John Wooden. There's my picks. I'm out.
All right. Well, actually, we've done this a couple times. I'm right with Zach. I'm all homers on this one. So, and his reasoning matches mine. So I'm right there. I swear I'm not copying. I had made that determination beforehand.
He knows how to win. He's got a game on me, so he's going to take my picks so I can't climb
Well,
him.
I have picked earlier in the set the last couple weeks. So,
You need to send your picks to somebody, Carl. Saying.
Cass.
Mine is real close to y'all's. I'm taking home except Maryland over Ohio State. I don't trust them to find the magic 2 weeks in a row. So I'm going
But
Maryland.
see,
I think Illinois Purdue is very close. I think Michigan State Northwestern is very close. I'm giving the edge to Maryland just because I don't trust Ohio State. I don't really trust Maryland either, but I trust them just that much more than Ohio State.
if it had just been a series win, I would have been with you. They went on the road and swept a series.
Which is why
And
their luck is gone.
oh, okay.
Hey,
That
Carl, I don't think I picked
that's my
that.
approach.
I think I skipped one of them because I don't have it on my paper. But you just mentioned Michigan State Northwestern, Cass?
Yes.
Yes.
It's
Okay,
at
that's good.
Northwestern.
I didn't have that. I'll just take
Okay.
Michigan State for my Izzo thing. Ed, that's
Okay.
mine.
I am also doing the Evansville preview because Indiana travels to Evansville, which will be tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern. That will be on ESPN Plus. The Purple Aces are 7-18 on the year. They have played a very tough schedule, so that's a piece of it. Indiana and Evansville have two common opponents. Vanderbilt were. Which matches right up because that was at Vanderbilt in a midweek, just like IU. IU won their game against Vanderbilt. Evansville lost 15-3, so that was a serious curb stomping there. The other common opponent is Xavier. Indiana beat Xavier on the road in a midweek. What Evansville did was more impressive, which is that they took 2 of 3 from Xavier on the road in a weekend. Evansville has also opened up Missouri Valley play with a 2-1 series win over Illinois State. So a couple of decent series wins. But obviously the midweeks have been a little bit more of a struggle for Evansville. Their midweek pitching duties is a lot like most of the teams we see all over the place. Lots of different arms, lots of seven pitcher pieces. Now, Indiana struggled with that last week against Indiana State, so that is something to keep an eye on. How will they do when these pitching changes are made? Will there be a lot of matchup type changes made? Those are the kind of things that I think Indiana wants to look at, but There's just I can't give you any specific guys because it's been all over the place, and it's just hard to tell. Offensively, Evansville's really struggled offensively. They only have two hitters that are north of 800 in OPS. And that is left fielder Ryan Seddon, and the freshman catcher Spike McGill. They don't have anyone hitting over 300 right now, so again, they're just really struggling. And it'll be interesting because I think based on the usage, I think Connor Lynn is not going to pitch in this game. And then Connor Lynn is probably being slated for an open possibly Friday. So with that, maybe it's Ivan Mostolski that opens. Maybe Rivera gets an inning or two, and then all the guys that a whole bunch of guys for single innings. So that's the Evansville preview, and now we're going to hand it over to Zach to preview the Scarlet Knights coming to the BART.
Yep. So Rutgers coming in 15-12 on the season. They're 5-6 on the road, so not too bad. In their Big Ten series, they've lost 2 of 3 to Michigan and Illinois, and they won the series 2 out of 3 against Michigan State. This is just a classic Rutgers team. They're not going to be anything special, but they're going to compete. So, and I think that's kind of what Indiana is this year. These two teams are pretty similar. They're going to have to duel it out, and I would assume that someone's going to win 2 out of 3. But for these hitters, Rutgers only has two guys that really stand out to me. Junior outfielder Peyton Bonds, he leads the team in most statistics, 28 RBIs, 42 hits in the season. He's hitting .375. Also, one thing, he's stolen 11 bases this year. So that is something I feel like not many teams have stolen on Indiana this year or have really even attempted stolen bases, but that guy, Peyton Bonds, who should hit probably in the one or two spot in that order, he'll probably try to steal a base this weekend. And also visiting catchers, I think we've seen a couple good ones come to the BART this year. Weber Neals looked good for Minnesota against Indiana. Now, senior catcher Trey Wells for the Scarlet Knights, he hits .342. He started all 27 games this year for them. So those two guys stand out the most, Bonds and Wells. As a team, they don't strike out too much. Only 188 times. That's in Indiana struck out 214 times. So that's just a little comparison there. All starters for Rutgers, they're all right-handers. The lowest ERA of the bunch at 4.44. So there's not really much of an excuse. You're not going to see guys that are going to overpower you. And especially, I think that Saturday game when Indiana has Tony Newbeck on the mound, that's one you got to win. So that's for Rutgers. It's Zach Konstantinovsky, Chris Sand, Dallin Harris. Those are their three starters. They have, I looked at the Big Ten's statistics overall, 9.1 Ks per nine, something that has plagued Indiana in some games this year, I guess, striking out a bunch. As a team, they've struck out 18 times this weekend at Nebraska. So maybe that could be a positive for the Hoosiers this weekend on the offense. I've always, for some reason, I've been ending it. With I've always done Chris's thing with the alumni, but I've been going to Mets players and I looked at Rutgers baseball alumni again, another Mets player for a bit, Todd Frazier. So, Chris, you can enjoy Todd Frazier and give us our Hoosiers in the pros updates as the MLB season has begun.
See, and a great handoff to the pros there. Frazier was also a Little League World Champion, by the way. Not a lot of people know that. What was it? Toms River, New Jersey, and they won the Little League World Series. And so we have some good, nice alumni work, even though it hasn't been much of a season yet. Kyle Schwarber decided to hit an Oppo Taco on opening day. He deposited this thing and left. Oh, what a blast. I mean, it wasn't like 480 feet or anything, but it's opposite field, so anything is great. So the pitcher's face was funny, but he's like, what? He couldn't believe that he got it out the other way. It was great. It was a two-run home run opening day. You know, an opening day crowd. Place is going nuts already. And then after that, they love their Schwarber, just like all the other teams he's been on. We also had some really good pitching performances. Timmy Herron, which I actually watched this live. I saw him warming up in the pen and Then he came in against Seattle. I may or may not have had a parlay love with Seattle. So that was a little odd to root against Timmy. But hey, no, he got two outs. He got to finish the inning, no runs, no hits. And then he could have been up for the win, but what's his name? The Guardians couldn't get a run across. They had a couple guys on after they pulled him. But he was solid. Kyle Hart, two innings for the Padres, three strikeouts, no hits, no runs. Tanner Gordon for the Albuquerque Isotopes, five innings, no runs. Everything is no runs. It's really good. I mean, the Hoosier arms have come out strong. Tanner also had five Ks. As far as our hitters, a couple of the highlights, Philip Glasser for a game for Rochester Red Wings, two for four, a double, two runs scored, and a steal. I feel like that was just like basic box score for IU, right? A couple hits, a double, a couple runs scored, steal some bags, play great D, and be a leader. Like that was Philip Glasser. So, and then we also have Matt Lloyd. His first game for the Worcester Red Sox, one for two, three walks also, and a run batted in. So we do have some pro highlights. I do want to mention David Welch. He was on our pod last week. If you didn't watch it, if you want to jump back, you can watch that one. He's really taken over the Pro Bowl Hoosier role that Pro Bowl was doing. He's kind of taking a step back. And I just want to really like, because I think I've said his Twitter name wrong. So it's at DCWELCH underscore 24. So you can check him out. And he's really been good with it. And he's really taken the role for baseball. He also does soccer stuff too. I don't know if he's going to have the German women's basketball scores. Can't swear to that. But he is really doing a great job with the baseball starting off. So thank you to David.
All right. Well, 2 weeks ago, we kind of sat here at this point and we were thinking about what the Hoosiers needed to do from a postseason perspective to get into postseason play. Now, even getting into the Big Ten tournament is a realistic question mark for this team. For our discussion today, I want us to answer two questions. How do we, as followers and fans of the team, define success for the back half of the season, given where we are now? You kind of have to say, okay, we're resetting now. What does success mean from this point forward? And the second question is, how does the team itself move on from this to simply start playing better baseball with the 27 games they have left? So, anybody wants to jump in, please do.
I think I'll answer that second question first, where I'll start with this weekend. Indiana was swept and was outscored 30-16. But this also in a weekend, they lost by 14 runs and they lost all three games. The Cornhuskers allowed 20, or they gave up 23 free passes, and 14 of those were on Saturday. So that's one thing. They couldn't take advantage of walks and a couple hit by pitches. They also started poorly. I think that is where they need to get better as a team. They were down 5-0 on Friday, 5-0 on Saturday, and then on Sunday they were actually up 2-0, and then they didn't score from that first inning until the sixth. So that is something. Starting quickly, and then maybe if you do start quick, you maintain that. And obviously, as we spoke before the show started, that Indiana scored two runs. They should have scored more than two. So. I think that the starting quick is an issue. And then also, there's not much you can do about this now, but I think we can all agree that there is a problem in terms of power on this team, and we've known this. And as a I can say, as a fan of a Major League Baseball team that used to have Luis Arraez, who would only hit singles, I think that that could be a recipe when you can just get base hit after base hit. Unfortunately, that's not how this has played out. And when you look at last season's team for Indiana, they had four guys with double-digit home runs. That was Dickerson with 19, Devin Taylor with 18, Jake Hanley with 14, and then Tyler Cerny was the other one with 10. This year, I think we're pretty much at the halfway mark. If I think
We're
that's
exactly at the halfway mark.
okay, exactly the halfway mark. Jake Hanley and Hogan Denny lead the team with five home runs each. Braden Ricketts is in the lone second spot with three home runs, and then Malamazian and Decker have two each. So if you look at that, we're at the halfway mark. If you double that, the leader for Indiana will have 10 home runs, where last year Dick Corbin Dickerson had 19 and led the team. So And just to kind of prove this point, this weekend, Indiana had two huge home runs where one was from Owen Tanuver, who made the score from 5-0 to 5-3. You score in a hurry when you hit a home run. Landon Fry did the same in the later, I think maybe that was Sunday, to make it 3-3 with his solo home run. So it's very simple. When you hit home runs, you can change the score very quickly. And that's something that this team doesn't exactly have, and maybe they're going to need more of going forward. So, to answer the question directly, how does the team itself move from this? They need to hit more home runs, start out quicker, and one more point I'll throw in: the team ERA right now is at 6.51. I think that's definitely higher than what they would want. The fourth most runs allowed in the Big Ten at 179. So that's where they need to improve as a team. And as fans, how do you define success in the back half of the season? Well, I guess you still look to make the Big Ten tournament, of course. And also you just need these younger players. This is a young team. Baseball is a team game that has combined with individual success. And you're going to need that. You're going to need bright spots out of young players. And that's most of the team. So I would just say, if you look at individual box scores each and every night, and if you can take a positive from a weekend of multiple players, that's where I define success, where you just got to grow and move towards next year, because a lot of these guys will be back and will be playing after a freshman season.
Yep, I think you hit the big points there. And I'm also going to back off a little bit on if you watched our emergency podcast a week and a half ago, I'm going to kind of back off of my initial disgust for the new tournament format. Kind of seeing where Indiana is now, there's an opportunity there. And it's not an opportunity to win the tournament, because I really do think the winner of the tournament's going to come from the top four seeds. It has to. But this is a chance to play some meaningful games on national television, where most of the games are, are elimination games. So there's that pressure environment. You get that experience on a big stage in a pressure environment, and you have a chance to accomplish something. So getting to Friday is going to be, or sorry, getting yeah, getting to Friday is going to be an accomplishment. Getting to Friday without having to play Thursday would also be an accomplishment, and maybe even allow you to possibly win one more. I don't think getting to Saturday is impossible in this tournament. I think getting to Sunday is almost impossible. Winning on Sunday, I think, is impossible. But the rest of that is that there are things you can check off. And I'm going to credit Austin Render for this, because he was kind of trying to compare to past Hoosier teams. And what he's hoping to see is kind of like that 22 team, which is one of my favorite Indiana teams. I enjoyed the heck out of that team. They were awful to start the season. They had that, we went down to Clemson. Couldn't throw a pitch anywhere near the strike zone, all those issues. But that team had so many young bats, and figured things out, and then eventually got to the point where they went to that Big Ten tournament and knocked Maryland out of the Big Ten tournament, a team that hosted a regional that year, knocked them out of the tournament. It was a big moment, and they ran out of pitching, so they didn't have really an opportunity at that point to win the tournament either. But it was still a really big moment in how they were able to play there in Omaha. So they still have that ahead of them, but they're gonna have to do what that team did, which is turn things around this point in the season. That team won its last five Big Ten series. And that's how they managed to get into that final spot. For the most part, and yes, I think, the ERA is an issue, but they also have had a lot of games where they've kept the game. We've talked about this a lot, where they've kept the game winnable from a run perspective. And I agree with all of, with Zach's points. I think they need to look at some different ways. They're gonna need to figure out a way to get Tanuver into this lineup. Now,
Which
There's
is.
also the whole, freshman doesn't have a lot of film on him, so there's some of those things that might, spark an early success from somebody that may not be sustainable on the degree that we've seen in the last week. But the point is, he clearly has power, and this team needs power. And they toyed with it last week. Braden Ricketts got 2 innings behind the plate. I mean, we love what TJ Skyler does defensively, but given what this team needs offensively, if Skyler's going to continue to hit under 100, I think they're going to have to look at other options. But you also with Skyler have the option to do what they have done many times, which is if you start Ricketts or Denny behind the plate, you do get a lead. You have the option to switching things around, bring Skyler in to finish a game with a positive defensive situation. So there's things we can that can be done, I think, to make things go a little bit better for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think to me, what I want to see from a fan perspective is I hate the term back to fundamentals. I want to see this team play good, strong, fundamental baseball. And if they get beat, they get beat. Like that's it. It's weekends like this past weekend where all three games were competitive late. This team could beat Nebraska. It could have beaten North Carolina. It could have beaten LSU. It could have beaten Oregon. But it didn't because of those little mistakes that just piled up. So I want to see this team play the strong fundamental baseball. And if they win, great. If they don't, if they get beat, legitimately, they get beat. I want to see the decrease in errors. I want to see shut down and get to that second out, inning over. Don't give up anything else. I want to see the bats be smart, aggressive. I want to see them play good ball. That's what I want, win or lose. I want to see good ball. I don't want these frustrating, just maddening games. That's really what I take from. And if they do that, with the schedule they have, they can rack up a lot of wins in those 27 games, and they can get into that bottom part of the Big Ten tournament. That's far from the realm of possibility. Like, that's not out of the realm of possibility at all. So that's really my big thing. I want to see clean, good ball.
Chris, do you want to chime in?
Yeah, I think Cass touched on something I definitely wanted to do, which was the schedule. It really lessens up from here on in. We've played the best teams we're going to play, okay, by far. Everything after now is going to be like we might be favored in almost every series. Maybe not everyone, but these were all easy.
Not at Purdue.
Not at
No.
Purdue, so maybe that one. And I can't say I know much about Abilene Christian, but everybody else, I feel like we're either favored or it's a coin flip. Where obviously we were not favored at Oregon or at Nebraska or at North Carolina or against LSU, so I get that. But like I was saying with the Red Belts, as much as, oh, we were in this game and this was a close game, you are what your record says you are. And we've won 10 baseball games, right? Okay.
Well, but we also have a series with Washington, and that was just
Yeah, that was
yeah.
bad.
Oh no,
That was
that's what
not
I'm saying.
a series that should have been lost.
No, whether you play good and lost, they're still losses. That's my point. It doesn't matter how they happened or why they happened or whatever the case. We played 25 games, 27 games, and we've won 10. And if they're mad about that, that's okay. I'm okay with that. And if they're mad about when they see all the errors on the stat sheets, I'm okay with that. Are they mad that they only see what did Zach say that they're only going to have 10 home runs at the end of the season? I'm okay with that. Because Matt Lord's not walking in that door. Grant Richardson's not walking through that door. And neither's Cole Ball. this is the team we have. So let's go through the end of the season. Don't make it a tendency, like, right? Okay, this is what happened before. Leave this season with an identity. Because all these guys are coming back. This isn't Calipari basketball, right? No, none of these guys are going anywhere. All right. We're going to have the same team plus a very good incoming class if we don't lose a couple to the draft. So build an identity for the next 27 games against, again, I don't know. Maybe Albertine Christian is great, but I don't know. But Iowa, Northwestern, Illinois, Maryland, and Purdue. I mean, it's not something we should have to tell them that it's all teams you want to beat. We got two rivals. Maybe this crew doesn't know the rivalry between us and Maryland. Somebody tell them. Purdue, we know
Craig
they.
Vitolo should tell him.
Somebody tell them. I mean, or Cangelosi, come in and give them a speech. I don't care. There's plenty of reasons to want to win baseball games. I also liked what Cass said about the baseball good ball, right? She called it good ball. I call it baseball IQ because I hear the announcer say it that, but it shows some baseball IQ. Make the plays you're supposed to make. Do what you're supposed to do. Don't mail it in because that wouldn't. How's that going to help next year? And you're all coming back. Nobody's getting. If for some reason somebody picked you up, it ain't going to be to play. Okay, let's be honest here. You're all coming back. We're going to have some other guys coming in. We're going to have some more experience. And I kind of like the fact that we've never missed a Big Ten tournament. So go make it.
And I have two more additional points I want to make based on this that you guys keep tripped on me right there. I think the two more points I want to make. First of all, I want to see this team have fun from here on.
Yes.
I think that's been a bit of an issue. I think it's, and Coach specifically said, kind of playing not to lose. Go play to win. And, there maybe things, like Cass said, maybe things don't go your way, but you know what? Put it out there. And I think it goes to the, looking strikeouts, and it's not so much. So, well, is that the two strike approach? Well, it's a lot of times it's because strike two was taken too, and strike two might have been the pitch that was in the zone in the zone that they were looking for to be hit. So, but above all else, I want to see these guys just let the frustration go. Don't listen to the stupid people like us online. Just go have fun and play some great baseball. And I've completely forgotten what the second point was, so I'm just going to let that go.
Well,
Go ahead,
going
Cass.
off of that, having fun, in years past, we've seen a lot of, maybe not a lot of, but we've seen a fair amount of what I'm going to call dugout shenanigans. And that goes to the having fun and meshing as a team and enjoying playing ball. That's one of my favorite things about college ball is the amount of fun that can be had. And it just seems like we haven't seen that a ton this year. I go
I remember my other point.
ahead.
2 years ago, the UCLA Bruins, with much the same position player group that they have today, failed to win 20 games. Food for thought. And thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer, Zach Horwitz, and Chris Feeney, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.